obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
To introduce our Night Owl speaker, Jack G. from Huntington Beach, California.
Hi, I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you, and I don't want to use the God name. I don't like using it, but I was just sitting here, and I was thinking of Steve Hall, and I had my eyes closed, and my buddy Steve, he had me take a commitment here for 2 years. He's the only guy I would have taken a fucking 2-year commitment for, I will tell you, and he goes, will you do this? I go, yeah, I'll do it. He goes, it's 2 years. I'm like, what? You know, it's like, but you couldn't say no to him. You know what I mean? What am I going to do? Say no. And so I just was sitting there with my eyes closed thinking about him. And then I opened my eyes and there's his beautiful wife sitting there. And I don't know. I went to a meeting today and I was bummed. I didn't know what was going on. It's like we were sitting in this meeting, my buddy John and I and Mike, and we're sitting in this meeting. And I was trying to figure out what the hell they were even talking about. It's like, you know, I wanted to stop for a second and just say, hey, are you guys just, you know, we're in AA, man. I mean, you know where you are right now? We're not in, hey, I'm fucking tortured by sobriety anonymous meeting or whatever it was. You know, it's like, and I'm thinking, where's the program in this? Where's God in this? Where is the connection to the spirit and what's going on? I'm thinking, what are you talking about? This isn't a punishment. It's like I wanted to stand up in the meeting and apologize, and I kind of did a little bit. I don't know where. It's like I'm 26 years sober. I'm hoping my mouth will shut soon. It has not yet. And, you know, I did apologize, you know, and I just told those new people in there, hey, man, look, it's not like this. You know what I mean? I know it seems like this right now. And it is like this right now, but it's not like this, you know. You know, it's like people will look at it's like, I don't know where they missed the line, you know, freedom. Did you leave that line out? You know, sometimes I think some people's books are like CIA given books. You know what I mean? Where somebody's actually gone through it with a black magic marker and just took out a bunch of bitch and shit out of the book. You know what I mean? And then the part they get is this torturous, damned to all eternity, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the pain of being sober. You know, it's like, fuck, wake up, man. Stop it. Stop it. I mean, do you believe you're a survivor of a shipwreck? Do you believe you're in the boat? Do you believe you're saved? Do you believe you got a fatal illness? Do you believe you're connected? And if so, why don't you act like it? Why do you act like it? You know, it's just, and I know this isn't Sunday morning and I'm not at church, but anyway, I've actually been told by a couple of priest friends of mine, hey, we'd love to have you attend service, but you won't be talking down there, Jack. Anyway, it's like, all right, fine. I'll catch you in the parking lot. But act like it. Act like it. What are we talking about? It's like sometimes, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous turns into a pissing contest for what we've done to hurt people. You know, it's like, really, man? That's what we're about. That's what this is about. And if you think about it, sometimes you hear people go, oh, he's got such a great story. What a great story. Really? Let's contact all those people he tore through. And let's see how great they think the story is. Let's contact the state of California and see how great they think that story is. Contact the ex-wives, ex-husbands, the children they haven't seen, the child support that hasn't been paid, and let's find out how great that story is. You know what makes a story great in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's when we make amends to somebody. When we show up. When we actually do what we're supposed to be doing. That's what makes a great story here. Not tearing people apart. I don't know. I've never felt comfortable with that. I've never felt comfortable with sitting there and going through this stuff. It's like, hey, you know what? I hurt people. People got hurt. You know, there's a lot of people today, they don't want anything to do with me. 26 years sober, working a program to the best of my ability, sticking a hand out wherever it needed, And I got people that would just as quickly say, go be sober somewhere else for the damage I've done. You know, you'll come into AA sometimes and you'll hear people say, oh, your family's going to return, this is going to return. No, it's not. They don't all return. Some of the damage we have done to people is so great, so great. And I had this guy call me the other day from Maine because he wants to work the program. It's like, oh, well, nobody's sober in Maine? What are you doing, man? He goes, oh, I need you to help me. I need you or Chris Raymer. That's what he said. I don't know if you know Chris Raymer. Anyway, whatever. It's like, I don't know what this guy was thinking. He goes, I got to get through this work to help the new man. I go, really? I go, where'd you stop? Well, I haven't made any amends. Okay, well, make those and then we'll talk. Well, can't we just go to the start? I go, no, man. Clean it up. Why haven't you cleaned it up? Well, I got to go through this work. Help the new man. I go, you know what, dude? I don't want to hear you from any of you. I don't want to hear you anymore. I'm not going to listen to you. And I'm not going to take one more phone call from you until you write me a list of the people that you have harmed and how you're going to clean it up. Oh, you're right. I'll get on that Monday. What day is it? It's like, what day is it? Friday? I don't know the days very well. He still hasn't called. Of course not. Because he doesn't want to do the work. He doesn't want to clean it up. And then the question is, why? Why don't you want to clean it up? Why don't you want to do the work? And it comes to, there's a thing, there's an AA amends and then there's a real life amends. Sometimes AA amends, you get these people, and I don't know why I'm on this, and I promise I'll stop in a minute. Anyway, you get these guys and they do amends because their sponsor told them to make an amends. That's why they're making an amends? Really? Because your sponsor told you to make an amends? What about making amends because you feel bad for the people you hurt? What about that? When does that come? I remember when I made my first amends to my mother. And, I was told to do it. And I wanted to look good in front of you guys. Because I'm that kind of person. I want to look good. I want to come back with a report of what I've done. Get my hand up in the meeting. I made amends to my mother and I hugged her the first time since I was 3. And I didn't mean it. But I told her that I loved her. How's that? Yay! Everyone's cheering. You know what I mean? Great. Yeah, great amends. Did I mean it? No. I didn't mean it. Because I didn't really feel it. And I didn't understand what she'd gone through. I didn't understand anything about it. You want to know when I went back and made amends to my mom for real? Not an AA amends, but a real amends? Was when my daughter started getting loaded. And all of a sudden, I started getting a little taste of what my mom was dealing with constantly. Then I went back and said, hey, I'm really sorry now. Now I'm really sorry. I said, how did you deal with that? How did you deal with this, man? And my mom looked at me and she said, sweetheart, I would lay in bed at night and pray that you wouldn't die. It's fucking terrible, man. And then I asked this guy, well, why don't you want to clean that up? Because you're not even aware you've done anything to somebody and you want to take somebody through this work? What work? What work are you talking about? Just going through some steps? What has that got to do with this? We're talking about connection. We're talking about awareness, about waking up, about realizing that we have torn through the lives of people, not just following orders. Anyway, I'll tell you how I got here, because this is a real downer for late night. So anyway, it's really not that bad. I'll tell you how I got here. I lived at my mother's house. And if it was up to my mother, I'd still be living at my mother's house right now. The Al-Anon people never got one hand on my mom. Not one. The blood of the lamb was spray painted on our front door and the Al-Anons just drifted right on by. Never. Ever. I would go to jail. When I would get out of jail, my mom would go, they're always picking on you, sweetheart. You're right, mother. I'd be passed out in the neighbor's yard anytime, day or night, with my pants down. And if the neighbors had the balls to come over and complain, my mother would say, leave him alone, he's an artist. And it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped. This is another thing. If you think your family's going to change just because you got sober, yeah, good luck, man. Now, I'm not saying that our behavior doesn't influence people, because our behavior does influence people. We can change people. We can't. Some people will change after watching us change. That does happen. but don't count on it. My mother is the same, and I'll tell you a quick little mom story. My daughter, I got five kids now, and the 15-year-old got, she wasn't 15 at the time, she's like 13 or whatever, and she got in trouble. She comes to me one day, she goes, Pops, I got to talk. They call me Pops. She goes, Pops, I got to talk to you. I go, what's up, sweetheart? She goes, I did something I'm not feeling so good about. I go, what'd you do? She goes, I toilet papered a house. I go, what do you want me to do about it? You know what I mean? It's like, what am I supposed to do about it? She goes, oh, I just wanted to tell you. I go, oh, cool. I go, why'd you do it anyway? She goes, ah, she was against solar power. I go, yeah, right on, man. Little crusader, get down. Yeah. So I get a call 3 days later from her mother, and her mother says, I got to go to parenting classes. I go, parenting classes? For what? She goes, George is on probation for that toilet paper deal. I go, what? Probation for toilet papering? I'm pissed. And I got to go to parenting classes. I'm rolling in criminal court with this little baby, freckle face, blonde hair, little surfer volleyball player girl sitting next to some tatted down dude like who's in for something. And she, it's like I'm like, really, man? And I got so angry. I'm saying, I want to talk to the detective in charge. I go, I'm a taxpayer. And I don't really pay him, but I file. But I do file. Right, sweetheart? We file. Anyway, so I do file, so I'm going to talk to somebody about this. So I go in to make an appointment with the detective, and I roll in hot. You know what I mean? And it's great. Sometimes you'll get the new guys, and they start bragging about, they'll go, I got pulled over and didn't go to jail. You know what I mean? Because they all got warrants normally. You know what I mean? So when the new guy's excited about, that was the first time I got pulled over and didn't go to jail. And everyone claps. You know what I mean? Stay sober longer. And you can argue with the police also when you're fully insured, registered, and everything else. Anyway, so I go in to the detective's office. I want to talk about it. I roll in hot. And I got baby girls sitting next to me. I go, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? People are killing each other all over the streets by my house. I live in downtown Huntington, right? Anyway, so it's like they're killing each other, and you're arresting baby girl for toilet papering. Are you kidding me? And the guy looks at me and goes, how much do you know about the case? I go, the case? He goes, that's what I thought. And he pulls out this big old folder, like 2 inches thick. And he pushed it towards me, and he opens it up. And on the front page is an 8x10 black and white photograph of the side of this house. And on the side of the house, in black thick magic marker, is a poorly drawn penis. And the words, suck my blunt. I look over at her, and she goes like this and puts her hand up like that. And the only reason she didn't get a smack on the butt is it was a poorly drawn penis. I could tell she had not actually seen one yet. You know what I'm saying? It looked like a beach ball with a triangle on top of it, right? All right, but here's the whole point. The whole point of this stupid story is I'm out to lunch with my mom. And she goes, so what happened down there at the house? I go, Georgia, man. I go, she vandalized the house. I go, she wrote penises on the wall. They egged it. I go, she totally, they toilet papered it, egged it, vandalized it. And my mother looks at me and goes, well, how close to Halloween was it? What? I mean, was it a big penis? I mean, what are they complaining about? Anyway, so... it's a shock that I'm not dead right now. But so that's what was going on at my mother's house. Hasn't changed, still not changed. I just let it go. You know what I mean? She's her. I'm cool with her being her. She gets to be her, and I stay away. I mean, I call her every day and tell her I love her, though, because that's my deal. No matter what, part of my amends that I make to my mom is every morning I call her and I say, I love you. I just want to let you know I'm okay because of what I did to her. So... anyway, I'm living at my mom's, and here's how I got to you guys. A buddy of mine got busted on a cocaine trafficking charge. Okay, great. I believe that more alcoholics are created in court than anywhere else in the world. It's not the first drink. It's not the local bar. It's court. Because hundreds of thousands of us go into court every day non-alcoholic. And we get in front of the judge. Judge says, Mr. Smith, you're looking at a year sentence. But if you're an alcoholic, you could do a 90-day treatment program.
I'm an alcoholic, Your Honor.
Everybody is now, right? Not so. Not so. Do you want to know the first time I said that joke was right here. Right here. And it just kind of popped out of my head. And I said it and I laughed and it was funny, right? But I'm going to tell you something. If you're brand new and you're up in here right now, I'm your friend. First of all, I want to let you know I'm your friend. Some of these people may not be. I am your friend. I am really your friend. And I'm going to help you. If you're coming into us right now and you're just saying stuff and blowing smoke up our ass to make us think that you like being here and you're looking forward to making these amends and cleaning all this stuff up and being a solid guy, stop now. Stop now. We know you're not telling the truth. You're not happy to be here when you're new. My friend Frank Honeycutt used to say, if you're brand new and happy to be here, partner, you're too sick to stay. And he's right, because we know you're not happy about this. You got to follow orders. We're alcoholics too. We get it, you know? And so you might as well just start from the start just telling us the truth. Tell us the truth from the start, because also love and tolerance is our code. I didn't know if you're aware of that, but that's our code. I mean, you could basically go into a meeting, stand there and just flip everyone in the room off, cuss us all out, and we'll just clap and tell you to keep coming back. Yeah, bring it. Future coffee maker, get it. And the other thing is, what I've also learned in AA is, do you know that no matter what you say in here, someone will disagree with you? No matter what you say. You could stand at the podium and say the ocean is wet. Somebody else will stand up and go, not along the edge, it's not. No. It's crazy. I don't know if you're real. We're crazy. This is a mental institution you're sitting in at a nice hotel. These people are nuts in here. And so I said that joke about more alcoholics being created in court. It just popped out. It was funny. Everybody laughed. And then after the meeting, this dude comes up to me, and he's huge, huge. And I'm huge. I'm 6'4", 280, lying about the 280 right now. Huge, huge, right? And this guy's bigger than me, bad tattoos all over him. He walks up to me and goes, can I talk to you, man? I go, oh, I go, yeah, what's up? He goes, I did the year, dog. Oh, well, then you're a stupid alcoholic. God, if you don't got enough sense to cop a plea to stay out of jail, man, you better get up on in here and start working some steps, champ, because you're going to die out there with that weak game. Anyway, so that's what my buddy did. He goes to court and he says he's got a problem. He did not have a problem 2 weeks before that. I was getting loaded with him. There was no problem mentioned at all. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know what, Jack? I think I have a problem. I'm going to set out on that last line of blow. Why don't you clean that up for us there? No, it was like, are you cutting that even, dude? There was no problem mentioned. And I love it. Sometimes my wife tries to make me watch movies about the Egyptians or whatever it is, and they're moving these big stones, and everybody's bragging about these big stones. Let me tell you something, man. I have seen guys cut little teeny stones to such a degree of clarity that aliens must be helping them. It's like, you know, to the grain. You give the other guy the razor blade and say, you cut it, I get to pick. All right, anyway, it's like, you will never see a more even cut in your life, man. I mean, the Egyptians are dealing with tons. These guys are, well, anyway, whatever, let's not get into all that. And that's not an outside issue. Just thought I'd throw that out there to you guys. Not an outside issue. If I mention drugs, alcohol, marijuana in the meat, it's not an outside issue. I'm here for alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic. That's why I'm here. And those are other things that got involved. Read the goddamn big book. Bill talks about it. But I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. That's what I am. Now, let's not get into all this. Anyway, but you know what? I got ran out of a meeting. I didn't get ran out. I got chased out. All right, so let's just have a little ADD moment, because I do remember where I am. Anyway, I'm at this meeting. Now, when I go into a meeting, I know what I'm there for. I'm not there for me. I'm not there to dump my problems on the group. So I feel better. Yeah, great. I feel better. Everyone else in the room doesn't now. Because I just dumped my, well, I got that out. Great. I'm out of here. Back to work, champ. Yeah, and everyone else in the room's going, God, why do I feel so shitty? You know, it's like, yeah, because you just got dumped on, bro. That's why. Anyway, I go to the meetings. I try to stick on the topic if there is one. I try to share solution. I talk about the traditions, God, connection, all that. So I go to this meeting. I mention marijuana. I mention smoking a bong hit. In the meeting, and a guy chases me out and says I have violated the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go, are you kidding me, man? I go, do you got a sponsor? And he's been sober forever. You know, it's like, call him, man. You know what I mean? Can you run this by him a little bit? Which is so crazy. I mention weed in the meeting, the guy chases me out. For what? What tradition am I breaking, bro? You sit in that meeting every day listening to people talk about their cats. You don't chase them out. She was talking about kibbles and bits, both, in the meeting. You sat there with a smile on your face. All right, whatever. Anyway, so my buddy says, all right, he goes to court and he says he's an alcoholic. Great, more alcoholics created in court, blah, 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 all that business. And so he goes to treatment. And you H&I guys get up there and start healing on him or whatever the hell you start doing on those people in there. Getting them all pumped full of the spirit and whatnot. And he comes back to Long Beach, because that's where I was living at the time with my mother. And he comes back as a reformer. A reformer. The big book says we're not supposed to start out as reformers. But that's what this guy did. He came back to Long Beach with his walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus thing, or whatever's going on. And he's going to save the neighborhood. And who's first stop? My mother's house, stop number one. And real quick, I love this book. I love this book dearly. I love the big book. And it's not, it's fun, man. The big book's fun. I've been doing a big book study at my house for the last 16 years. You know, the last time it took us 2.5 years to get through 164 pages. I mean, you know, you go to my house, we break it down, man. Anyway, so you come back and we're on one paragraph. You come back 2 months later and we've only moved down one little bit. But because there's a lot of important stuff in here. But anyway, but there's also fun stuff. Like, people forget that these guys were drunks. They forget. It's like they talk about Bill and Bob like they weren't drunks. They were drunks. And not only were they drunks, there might have been some scamish stuff going on in there a little bit. You know what I mean? I mean, when they first made this, they thought, we're going to sell it. They wanted to sell it. That was the deal. They thought, oh, we've got the solution. We're going to go to big companies. We're going to get this. We're going to get this. We're going to sell this. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. That's why we give it away. Nobody wanted it. But I was reading the book one time, and I'm going through it, and I'm reading it, and I love reading it, and I was just thinking about them being hustlers and scammy guys and doing whatever, and salesmen trying to sell this thing. And so I'm reading the book, and when I was reading the book, I was thinking about late-night TV. Have you ever watched, like, those late-night, like when you're watching late night TV and then they run like a Viagra commercial or whatever it is. What's the new one now? What do they got? What's? Oh, sadly, you knew that. All right, anyway. Come on, it's late night. It's not A material, but it's B material. All right, anyway. So I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking about those commercials. You ever seen those commercials? It's like the people are in there and they're smiling and like the guy's like rubbing his pant leg. He's got his hand on his pant leg and he's like winking at the girl and she's winking back. And the announcer's voice comes out and goes, this is going to be good. Oh yeah, tonight's going to go, baby. You know, it's all smooth, right? So I'm reading the big book and I think, oh my God, I just found the sales pitch for Alcoholics Anonymous. I found it. So here it is right now. So just imagine Bill and Bob late night. Maybe Bill's rubbing his pant leg. Whatever's going on. Whatever's going on. And here it is. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover. To see them help others. To watch loneliness vanish. To see a fellowship grow up about you. To have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Right? It's like you can just see them going, yeah, yeah, get it, Bill. Anyway, all right. But, so what happens though at the end of the commercial, after the winking, the rubbing, and all that goes on, now all of a sudden, a different voice comes in. A little higher pitched, more frantic voice comes in. Hey, if that lasts longer than 4 hours, you need to call a hospital, right? Whatever it is, right? So, you know, the fine print. So I'm laughing, thinking about them selling the big book, right? And I'm reading the pitch. And then I flip over a few more pages, and I find the fine print. And here it is right here, if I may. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash a furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor to administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. So anyway. And never once have I seen that red on a 12-step call. Once! They never come to the new guy and go, all right, let me tell you what's really going to go down here, man. You know, they always pump them up with that other crap. They don't tell them the truth. Anyway, all right. So, here's what happens. A guy comes to my mother's house, knocking on the door, looking for me. You know, oh, go back. ADD, swing with me. Do you know where we are? My buddy got out of treatment, came to my mother's to save me. All right. Sometimes my kids have to stop me and say, what are you talking about? It's like, oh, I'm talking about what we were talking about the day before yesterday. I'm just continuing with that thought now. Anyway, so my buddy's pounding on the door. Pounding, 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 pounding. I open it up. I go, hey, what's up, man? He goes, you got a problem, dude. I go, what? He goes, you got a problem, man. He goes, you're an alcoholic. I go, no. No, I'm not. I live at my mom's. So, and real quick, know what I always used to get mad at? It's like, why, this is just what you're getting this evening. So anyway, why don't they ever do a pamphlet on the bedevilments? Why not? Why, where's the bedevilment pamphlet? Do you know what the bedevilments are on page 52? This is really what, hey, you're drinking, great, you're drinking, you're out of control, drunk, great, blacking out, blah, 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 blah. But how are you sober? How are you sober? So if you ask me what was going on at my mother's house, well, I'll tell you what was going on at my mother's house. We were having trouble with personal relationships. Yeah, I got warrants out for my arrest and people trying to kill me. My girl that I got pregnant, I got a girl pregnant, I said, move into my mom's house with me. Let's have a baby. And at the same time, I fall in love with a girl of questionable age, and I take her to Mexico and marry her. Yes, I'm having trouble with personal relationships. It's like, you're out of your mind, champ. What are you talking about? Well, let's just go to the next one. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Really? Why isn't that in a pamphlet? There's not a lot of wiggle room around that. Do you know what your emotional nature is? How you act when you have an emotion. That's what it is. When you get angry, what do you do? Oh, I deal with it in a proper manner. Really? And the baseball bat in your hand is for what? Where is that? Where's that going? And you just got arrested for what? Was that resisting? Is that what they got you for? Or was it assault? I can't remember exactly what it was. I mean, when I was newly sober, I bragged that we had the same telephone. That doesn't even make any sense nowadays. But I'd be on the phone, and the phone would be on the wall for you younger people. Phones actually used to be attached to the walls. Right? It's like, they were not mobile unless you got like the 25-foot cord that they came out with. Like, Because they had this long, you could get like a 25-foot cord on the phone. That's about as mobile as that got. Anyway, but I'd be on the phone, and then I'd start losing it. And I couldn't control my emotional nature. So the first thing I'd do was grab the, take the phone and just through the window, through whatever. You know, the phone would go down first, smash the phone. And then I'd head out to smash more things. I couldn't control my emotional natures. I love this one. We were a prey to misery and depression. Of course. I mean, I hate to have another Frankism, but another Frankism was, the one thing you can say about self-pity, son, is it is sincere.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I was so good at depression. I was the best. I mean, if I wasn't straight, I'd think I was gay, man. I am the biggest drama queen you've ever seen. And I'd be like a queen, not like a leather guy, gay guy. I'm like a more of a queen gay guy if I was gay, but I'm pretty sure I'm straight, right? At least I've done a good job as masquerading as a straight man. But anyway, I mean, I go to big productions when I get depressed. I tried to hang myself one day, and it was like, I'm at my mother's house, and I'm boarding up the windows at my mom's house. She's like, what are you doing in there, baby? What's going on? Oh, just leave me alone. Leave me alone. Right? I'm boarding up the, they said nails? You know, whatever. I'm boarding up the windows at my mother's house, and I've got Marvin Gaye on. Because Marvin's tortured, I'm tortured, he's black, I'm black, I got Marvin on, right? I got a noose, right? I used to have a noose over my bed. I had a chin-up bar that I had put up to do some physical exercise, but I never did any. I did install it. It was installed, right? It was a great place to hang a noose. So I had a noose hanging off this chin-up bar. I was on the one-day-at-a-time program before I even knew what that was. I would wake up in the morning, look at the noose, and go, should I hang myself? No, I'll go one more day, man. One more day. I mean, so this one day I'm in there, I got the noose down, got it around my neck, got it over the counter, it's a little cabinet in the room, I got the windows boarded up, Marvin Gaye on, naked. You have to be found naked, man. You know what I mean? His naked and bloated body was found at 3:15, and, you know. And then, so I'm naked, I got the thing on, I'm thinking, note. They need a note. They need a note. I want them to know what they have done to me. I mean, you know what? The only tattoo I've got was in a blackout. It's a blackout. I got a broken heart, half done, tattooed on my tit. In a blackout! Because the world was so cruel to me. I woke up the next morning with a bandage on my tit. I think, oh my God, I've been shot. I pull it off and it's not even finished. They kicked me out of the parlor before it got done. So it's half done. I call the tattoo guy, I go, what are you doing, man? I go, you know I don't get tattoos. I go, dude, I didn't even know where I was. He goes, Jack, you sounded good when you came in, bro. Damn it. Anyway, so I'm up on the thing with the thing, getting ready to go, Marvin's on, and I realize no note, so I stop and write a note, and then I realize, where's the note gonna go? Where's the note go? They gotta find the note, man. Right away. Right away, I want them to know what's happened here. So I get a safety pin and pin it onto the tit. And then look at, come on, with my background, that's not a far stretch. Anyway. And this nipple, I don't even know where this nipple is. Anyway, so I pin it on, and I'm there, and I'm going, and what's going on? And I'm on the thing, and I'm like shaking. Bam! I go down, cabinet breaks. And so, yes, I was a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. No, I couldn't. I'm very hireable. don't know if you've ever seen Steinfeld. You know what? Steinfeld. George Costanza could get any job. He just couldn't keep it. That's me. I can get jobs. I can't keep them. I was a car salesman for a little bit. You know what I mean? And the guy at the sales tower would say, Jack Grisham, please report to the sales tower if you're not with a marshal. Because they were serving me restraining orders while I'm on the lot. It's like, well, I love her. Oh, if I walk away, do you think she'll believe I really care? Of course not. I prove my love daily. I was a keep coming back guy. He's coming back. Anyway, yeah, I could get a job, couldn't hold it. I had a boss one time tell me, dude, you belong in the jungle or in jail. We had a feeling of uselessness. Yeah. We were unhappy. Yeah. Yeah. We couldn't seem to be a real help to anyone, except my mother. She got to practice her non-Al-Anon program on me. Anyway, that's what's going on at my mom's house when this guy comes here. He comes over to save me, knocks, says, you're an alcoholic. I said, no, I live with my mother. I tell you what else was going on. I had warrants out for my arrest. I always had warrants out for my arrest. I had people trying to kill me, both real and imagined. And he says, you're an alcoholic. And I walk him away from the door. I don't want my mother to hear that kind of talk. And he says, come to a meeting with me. I go, a meeting? A meeting of what? He goes, 12-step meeting. Come on down. Yeah, right, bro. You go down. I saw you get popped. You go. He goes, come to a meeting. No. Come to a meeting. No. Come on, come. No. Come on, come. No. Come on, dude. Come to. No. Come. No. Come to. No. Come on, dude. Come to me. No. Come on. Come on. One meeting. Come to me. No. Come on, come to me. No. Come on, come. No. Come on, come to me. Okay. Now, do you know why I said okay? Because I'm an alcoholic. And I'll say anything to get you to leave me alone, including I'm Jack Grisham and I'm an alcoholic. Do you want to know one of the problems I've got with Alcoholics Anonymous? And I got a bunch of problems with Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's all right. Bill had problems with us too. Are you aware of that? That's why we got the traditions. Bill had problems with us. Could you imagine creating something this cool and leaving it in our hands? You ever been to an AA business meeting? I've seen fist fights over what coffee pot they're going to use. One of my problems with this is that we're too quick to get the new man and the new woman to say they're an alcoholic. And we push them into it. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Don't say addict, goddammit. Say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. And we push them into it. And have you ever been to a meeting where they go around the room before the meeting starts and identify, and a guy's there on a court card? I'm John alcoholic, I'm Bud alcoholic, I'm Jim alcoholic, I'm Tony, I'm here on a court card. Woo! The whole room goes crazy. Like a bunch of monkeys let out of a cage. We got one, we got one, we got one. And you just see their eyes spinning. Know what I'm gonna say? Oh yeah. I know what I'm going to say. And then when the meeting starts, the whole meeting is dedicated to Tony and his denial. I remember when I, too, came in on a court card, Tony. Unbelievable! He's not even an alcoholic. He was shooting a round of golf. It was a bad round. Bad round. After the round, he stopped at the clubhouse and had a couple of cocktails. Pulled out of the clubhouse parking lot and got a 502 or whatever the hell they're calling them these days. He went to court, and Tony was smart enough to look at the judge and say, I'm an alcoholic, Your Honor. Because this is a scam. See, people don't realize that people use Alcoholics Anonymous as a scam all day long. They use us. Wake up. They use this as a scam to stay out of jail. It's a wonderful scam. And that's what he did. And he went to that meeting. Is he an alcoholic? No. He just drank too much. Let me tell you something. The next time they go around that room saying they're alcoholic, I'm Bud alcoholic, I'm Frank alcoholic, I'm Jim alcoholic, I'm Tony, I'm also an alcoholic. Now, does he think he's any more of an alcoholic than he was the day before? No. No. He just wants you to leave him alone. Sign his court card. Let him go. Rightly so. Real quick, if you're brand new and you are in an AA meeting, just letting you know that. But if you hear, right, and you're saying you're one of us in an AA meeting, saying you're an alcoholic, what you're claiming is a fatal illness. Fatal means it's going to kill you. Stop worrying about the mole on your back. It's the booze. And not only is it a fatal illness, this is where it gets really frightening. You're in an AA meeting, in here, according to our literature, it's a fatal illness that only a God or a spiritual experience can arrest. Do you have any idea how terrifying that is? No, you don't. Could you imagine going to your doctor's office and giving tests? God, I just did it again. When I first came in here, I'd go, giving tests. Now I'm over 50. It's like, giving tests. It's all down. I'm looking at you, sweetheart, when I say that. Anyway, so when Robin and I got married, she had good insurance, so she's like, we got to get you checked out. So anyway, you know, I got a pipe up here, one down there. Anyway, whatever. So could you imagine rolling into your doctor's office, giving your tests, whatever, rolling back in 3 days later, and you go, hey, how'd it go, man? He goes, no. Huh? What do you mean, no? Fatal. Huh? Yeah, fatal, you're done, dude. Huh? Yeah, fatal, you don't even need to pay your bill or put a dollar in the basket when it goes around. Fatal, you're done, fatal. Huh? Fatal. And though not a religious man, I favor prayer in cases such as yours. Do you know how terrifying that is? Do you know there's a story in our book that says it? I'm not talking about hidden story in the back of the fourth edition. I'm talking about right up front, the doctor says, hey, I don't even like treating people like you. And though not a religious man, I favor prayer in your case. Do you know how terrifying that is? Basically, if you're brand new in here, what you're saying is, I got a gun against my head. Bullets cocked. Bullets in the chamber, triggers cocked, boom, ready to go. And the only person that can stop this gun from firing is God, and I don't got one. That's what you're saying. But you don't really believe it. Because if you believe it, you'd be doing something about it. You know, I've been shot at a number of times, as you can imagine. And I'll tell you, when you're getting shot at, except I have one friend in here who actually just stood there and let him shoot him. But anyway, mostly normal people, Cody, when they're getting shot at, when the bullets start going, they go down. Everybody goes down. When the bullets start going, everybody goes down. And I don't care how tough the guy is next to you, they all go down. And their voices go up like 2 octaves. Did you see which way it's coming from? Right? It's not until the car pulls off that the guy goes, I would have beat his ass, man. You know, it's like, yeah, I get it, Pee Wee Herman. Anyway, so, but why are they ducking? Because they think they're going to get hit. They think they're going to get hit. They think they're going to die. And you come in here, and you sit in here, and you ruin your life, and you tear this stuff up, and you watch this. You come in here, we tell you you got a fatal illness, and you go, oh, I've got a fatal illness, I'm here. But you don't really believe it, because you're not ducking. You go to a meeting and say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, basically saying I have a fatal illness, so only God experience can help. And then you go outside and vape. And have a cookie. Why? Because you don't really believe it. You don't really believe it. Because if you believe it, you'd be doing anything possible to arrest it. Anything possible. Hunting down a sponsor, taking commitments, doing anything you could. to be here. And you don't, because you don't believe it. And I love it. You know, the book talks about trying to get somebody to see it. You know, I love these guys that, I hear these guys in meetings, man. There's no lack of pride in AA meetings, man. I tell you, I hear these guys will go, I make my men do a first step. I make them do a first step. Really? You make your guy admit to his innermost self that he's an alcoholic. How the hell do you do that? Well, I make him do a third step. I do make him do a third step. Yeah. You make your guy turn his will and his life over the care of God. How do you do that? You should go to the Middle East. Can't make people believe they're an alcoholic, and we can't force them to seek God. It doesn't work that way. Anyway, I agreed to go to this meeting. I went. The first meeting I went to was a rap center in downtown Long Beach. It was the kind of meeting you push your shopping cart up out front and then go inside. The girl had most of her teeth. I was stoked. You know what I mean? It's like, and I mean, and mine are all knocked out. It's not like I'm coming from on high on this one. And I'll tell you, I rolled in there. My mother found out I was going to the meeting. She's like, are you going to that A&A, sweetheart? I go, yeah, I am, Mom. She goes, you want a couple dollars for coffee? I go, I need 40. They've got dues. And who am I to stop her from being helpful? Anyway, so here's how I roll into my very first meeting. I got a pair of ragged shorts on. Ragged shorts. I got 40 from my mother in my pocket, though, so I'm walking tall. I got a Dickies work shirt with cigarette burns all over it. All my clothes had cigarette burns on it. Could I just be hammered, smoking, and I gotta say something to you, so I put my cigarette down for a second? Like somebody come on and go, dude, you're on fire, man. No, you're on fire, asshole. I got shiny shoes on, black patent leather shiny shoes on. A guy invited me to the wedding. I kept the shoes. I got the shoes on. And my hair at the time, down to my elbows, full of knots. Little do I know there's a Jolly Rancher in the back of it. I remember walking into my first meeting. Loser. Scumbag. I know that dude from school. I'm not like you. And let me tell you why I'm not like you. Because I'm a smooth drunk. I'm a Cary Grant drunk. When I start drinking, my cheeks get numb, me, right here, and I start smiling. Anyway, do you know what I heard in that meeting? I heard pride. Do you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place besides prison where people try to be the worst? You aware of that? Men and women wear the word homeless like a badge in here. I was homeless. They wear the word convict like a badge in here. I've been arrested 187 times, Doc. Oh, go for 188. Unbelievable, prideful, and damaging. Anyway, I listened to that crap, and I diagnosed myself non-alcoholic. Non-alcoholic, and I'm going to quit. And I did quit. I quit a whole bunch of times. I walked out of there. I was always quitting. Stop and start and stop and start and stop and start. And one of these times, I got 30 days. 30 solid days. No meetings, no God, no nothing. 30 solid days. And on my 30th day, I got a job as a bartender. Because I thought that would be a good job. And it is a good job. If you've properly worked a first step, being a bartender is an excellent job. If you have not properly worked a first step, Taco Bell is a bad idea for you. I went to work. On my way to work, I stopped by a friend's house to pick up some mushrooms for another friend. I was being of service. My buddy says, Jack, how's it going? I go, it's going real good, Lester, man. I go, it's going good. Everything's solid. I got 30 days. Everything's good. Mom's good. Underage girl's good. She's gone. Baby's gone. They moved out. Everything's solid. I got 30 days. I'm just on my way to work. Is that your bong? Bam. Cunning, baffling, and powerful alcohol disguised itself as a skunk bud and hid in this dude's bong. I reach out and I take a bong hit. And I come to with a bong in my mouth. And I think, oh my God, I just took a bong hit. Here I'm telling this guy, I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm sober, I'm stoned. Bam, that fast. Do you know the big book talks about that? It doesn't say bong. You will not find the word bong in the big book. But what it does talk about is strange mental blank spots while sober. Sober blackouts. Not drunken blackouts, sober blackouts. Can you imagine? You've got a disease or an illness that your very life depends on you not drinking. And you've got a head that says you're not even here, which is terrifying. No defenses, no defense. You weren't even aware this was going down. Saying no is a defense. It's a weak defense. But it is a defense. You were at least aware a transaction was taking place. Hey, do you want this? Nah. Okay, give it to me. Anyway, at least you were aware. No defense means you went into the market to get a loaf of bread. Next thing you know, you're sitting in your car with a pint bottle. How'd this happen? Think about that. If you're brand new, think about what sobriety means to you. Think about what you stand to lose. Going back to jail, wife, husband, kid, all that bullshit. Think about that and know this. Your head doesn't care. Doesn't care. No matter what you want, how much you cry, what you say, and what you hear, one day if you've got our illness, your head says bye-bye and you're gone. Gone. It's terrifying. I reach out and I take that bong hit. Well, now what? I'm not going back to AA on one bong hit. You know what I mean? What am I going to say? Oh, I took a bong hit. I surrender. I'll be GSR. Whatever you want. It's like, I don't think like that. I think, oh, you overreacted. You overreacted on all that sober business, and you got 30 days. And anybody that can get 30 days definitely does not have a problem. And I'm getting a little dry from the weed. I need a little drinky poo to wash this down. When I'm drinking and smoking weed, so these mushrooms are surely not going to get delivered. I go to work and I'm fired. Within a half an hour, first day on the job, which is not a record around here. I love it. Sometimes I'll see these guys with the big medallions, like peacocking around like they're the kings of AA or something. Really? You want to be kings of us? That's what you want to be? That's crazy. Go to a meeting one time. Try it. Raise your hand. Go, I got fired 15 minutes on the first day on the job. 15 minutes, got fired. Someone else raise their hand and go, I got fired in 10 minutes. And then someone else will raise their hand and go, I didn't even go my first day, bro. It's crazy. Anyway, so I'm fired, I'm on the street, staggering around, I got 5 grams of mushrooms in me now, I'm drunk, I'm loaded, I'm staggering around the street, and all of a sudden one of you guys shows up, and he sees me, one of you AA guys, NAAA guy sees me, he goes, Jack, can I help you? I go, yeah, can you take me to my mom's house, man? I'm losing it. He goes, yeah, I'll take you. He drives me home. When he drops me off, I'm getting out of the car. He goes, we'll talk tomorrow, 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 tomorrow. I'm like, oh, my God. All right. And I know what we'll talk tomorrow means. We'll talk tomorrow is code word for lecture. It means you're too hammered to talk to now, guy. I'll call back and yell at you when you're sober. I mean, even the book tells us, don't work with the wet ones unless you have to. I mean, have you ever heard two wet drunks talking? It's like totally different language, man. It's like the one will go, yeah, I got too many times, I want to take it back enough of you, but. And the other one will look up and go, I don't even know if you want to say that. What? I remember I did this 12-step call and this guy was so hammered and he was just talking gibberish. And I had a newcomer with me, he brings out his book and he goes, do you know what it says on page 52? You shit me. He doesn't know what you're saying now. It's like, are you kidding me? Just give him some of that booze and we'll catch him tomorrow. Anyway, so the next day me and this guy are talking and we're talking nice on the phone. And he's not saying nothing about me being loaded. So I bring it up. I go, hey, man. I go, oh, my God. I got his hammered last night, huh? And he goes, yep. I go, hey. Woo. I go, last night, huh, brah? He goes, yep. What I was waiting for is, Jack, you're an animal. Jack, you're a scumbag. Jack, you're trash. I've heard it my whole life. Loser, animal, scumbag, trash. And I'm waiting to hear it from this guy because he's a we don't drink and we definitely don't do any mushrooms either up in here. AA guy who has been seeing me coming in, out, in, out, in, out, coming late, getting a date, leaving early, in, out, in, out. And I'm waiting to get yelled at and it ain't coming. I go, hey, man. I go, dude, I go, I got loaded. I go, I blew 30 days, man. I got hammered. He goes, yeah, Jack, I know. He goes, you know what? You're probably an alcoholic. And if you're an alcoholic, you can't stop drinking. And if you do stop, you can't stay stopped on your own power. And that was the first time in my life I ever heard that. It's basically chapter 4, line 4, page 44, the definition of what it is to be an alcoholic. It was the first time in my life I ever heard that. And I wish that guy was still here, but he is not. 2 weeks later, on November 13th of 1988, that guy left these rooms, was hearing these pride stories and all this crap going on about using and drinking, what they've all, how much they've done, and he bought into it, and he went out and got loaded, and he died that night in the car. That man's name was Don Langston, and I owe a huge part of my sobriety to him. Anyway, I got sober on January 8th of 1989. I don't know why. One more day. It was a Sunday. One more day. And I got sober, and I came around here. I said I was an alcoholic, and I did this stuff, and I did some piddly steps, and I did this and got involved and helped here and blah, blah, blah. But every time I said I was an alcoholic, there was a little voice inside that said, no, you're not. No, you're not, man. Not like them. Not like them, you're not. And I did that for a year and a half. A year and a half. And thank God that second step works two ways. Coming to believe in a power greater than myself goes that way, that I come to believe in a power and in God. Know which way it also goes? The opposite way. I come to believe in the power of my illness. I come to believe in my insanity and the fatal condition that I carry. The same thing. While I'm staying sober, I'm watching death, 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 death. Crazy thought, crazy thought. I think like him. Death, 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 death. While I'm watching recover, recover, recover. Both ways. Year and a half sober, I'm sitting in a room, everything fine, no problem, great day, and I realize all of a sudden I saw myself like I'd never saw myself before, and I realize, you know what, dude, you're going again. You're going again, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're going to come in here one more time and say, these people are full of shit, and you don't need to be here. You don't need to do this thing, and you don't need to be here, and I realized I was going again, and you couldn't help me. No one in this room could help me. No hero sponsor, no 90 and 90, no memorizing every word in that book, because I knew my head was going to say, leave, go, and it was going to go, and I was going to do it. And what happened at that time is like the book talks about, that complete deflation, that hopelessness. I was hit with that, and it was like a ball going down, and when it hits the ground in slow motion, it just spreads out. I saw it. Totally deflated, done, hopeless, you can't help me. But in a split second, all of a sudden it came back up and I said, but they're doing it. They're doing it. If I do it, if I launched in, if I do it just like them, I'll do it. I'll get this. If I do what they do, and that's what I did. I did what you did, and I launched in wholeheartedly. The word surrender does not appear in the 164 of the big book, but the word abandon does. Abandon's from the French. It means to derelict. Derelict self, turn your back on it, walk away. And that's what I've done. And I've been here. And I'll tell you my favorite line in the big book, and I'm going to end with this. We get people coming in all the time, and they're struggling over the God thing, and they're fighting this and the spirit and whatever. And one of my favorite lines in the big book is on page 55. And Bill says, the consciousness of your belief is sure to come. Not your belief is sure to come. The consciousness, meaning you already believe. You just don't know it yet. Do the work and the belief appears. I did the work, the belief appeared, and I love being sober, and thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I've asked Nathan H. from Anaheim to read the promises and lead us out in the closing prayer.
My name is Nathan, and I'm an alcoholic. Amen. The promises, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor shut the door on it. We will comprehend the meaning of the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
We hope you have enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.